Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, August 16th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, TEA, Midland ISD is best in at least a decade. District earns 6 A's and 7 B's from state agency. By Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD earned its best report card in more than a decade, according to the Texas Education Agency. The TEA reported 13 combined A and B campuses, which was more than three times MISD's total in 2019, the last year campus grades were handed out. The A campuses, Early College High School at Midland College, Young Women's Leadership Academy, Carver Center, Bowie Fine Arts Academy, Emerson Elementary, and Santa Rita Elementary. The B campuses included four campuses that were F campuses in 2019, Houston College Preparatory Academy, Idea Travis Academy, Washington STEM Academy, and Jones Elementary. The other B campuses were General Franks Elementary, Pease Communications Technology Academy, and Bonham Elementary. The ratings also included 16 C campuses, 7 D campuses, and 2 F campuses. MISD officials said that the 2 F campuses are what is called a forced fail. Their actual scores were higher, but both failed a section, so the highest score they can get is a 59, according to MISD. The Texas Education Agency actually reported that campuses that had a D or F grade would be considered not rated. Still, in 2019, there were 10 D campuses and 9 F campuses, so 2022 was an improvement. In comparing our current rating with our previous pre-COVID score, we can see that true growth has occurred in the district. This rating should send a message that we take our mission seriously and we are excited about the continued growth through MISD, Superintendent Angelica Ramsey stated in a message to the Reporter Telegram. Seeing these improvements is a great encouragement to all our staff and parents. I want to thank our teachers and administrators for their hard work in getting to this place. We are still working diligently to ensure all students get the quality education they need to succeed. Also improving was the average campus grade, which went from a 69.3 to 77.6. Midland ISD also reported that 12 campuses showed improvements of 10 points or more. Two-thirds of those campuses showed 20-point increases compared to 2019. Idea Travis and Houston Collegiate Prep led the way with improvements of 38 and 36 points, respectively. Idea Travis and Houston are in-district partners with Idea Public Schools and Third Future Schools, respectively. This article is entitled, MISD Now Has Only 2 Failing Campuses. Texas Education Agency. District has fewest number of failing campuses in recent history. By Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD has the fewest number of failing campuses in more than a decade, according to information provided by the district. MISD reported 2 failing schools, which is a drop from 9, and the fewest going back to 2008, according to information from the Texas Education Agency. Putting a dent in the number of failing schools has been a priority for the district, which saw that number grow to 11 in both 2014 and 2015, and then 9 in both 2016 and 2019. The lack of improvement with failing schools has been a reason for changes in school district leadership and for the work Midland ISD has done in the past 6 to 7 years with the Texas Education Agency. MISD officials also said that the two F campuses are what is called a forced fail. Their actual scores were higher, but both failed a section, so the highest score they can get is a 59, according to MISD. The district, in its Lone Star governance plan, follows a constraint progress measure that states the number of F campuses will decrease from 9 to 0 by September 2026. The annual target for 2022 is 3. When asked about the reduction in failing schools, board member Rick Davis credited changes like the adoption of a new calendar, the inclusion of reading specialists, the reorganization of the District Service Center, formerly Central Office, to better support campuses, the change in culture and philosophy that the District Service Center created, providing additional resources to those campuses that needed additional resources, i.e. achievement zones, focused professional development, including professional learning communities, and the benefits of the work of our in-district partnerships at Travis, Sam Houston, and YWLA, which had just begun their work when COVID hit. I think the changes implemented were designed to provide the support our teachers and campus leaders need to help our students succeed, Davis wrote. The statistics showed that the average campus grade went from 69.3 to 77.6. Midland ISD also reported that 12 campuses showed improvements of 10 points or more. Two-thirds of those campuses showed 20-point increases compared to 2019. Of the 8 campuses showing improvements of 20 points or more, 6 were previously failing campuses, and another was a D campus. IDEA Travis and Houston Collegiate Prep, both failing schools in 2019, led the way with improvements of 38 and 36 points, respectively. IDEA Travis and Houston are in-district partners with IDEA Public Schools and Third Future Schools, respectively. Houston, IDEA Travis, Washington STEM, Pease Communications and Technology Academy, and Jones Elementary each went from a failing grade in 2019 to a B in 2022. This article is entitled, "New Act Would Increase Tax Rate on Oil Profits," by Mella McEwen. U.S. oil and gas producers know high oil and natural gas prices make them the target of legislators. That has been evident this year as critics decried producers' soaring profits, even as consumers saw record-high prices at the gasoline pump. In response, Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, last week introduced the Taxing Big Oil Profiteers Act to increase the tax rate on oil company profits, impose an excise tax on stock buybacks, and close a tax loophole. Focusing on oil companies reporting more than $1 billion in revenue, the act would call for a 21% additional tax on the excess profits of those companies. The act calculates excess profits by subtracting a normal return, a 10% return on expenses, from current profits. Any excess profits would be subject to the 21% additional tax, which would be added to any regular income tax due by the company. Second, there would be a 25% excise tax imposed on stock repurchased by the corporation. The act cites ExxonMobil's plan to repurchase $30 billion in stock by the end of 2023 and Chevron's plan to repurchase $10 billion in stock by the end of this year. Third, the act closes a loophole that allows oil companies to use an accounting method whereby they always deduct the newest, most expensive inventory rather than the oldest, least expensive inventory. This type of thing gets proposed periodically, generates a lot of attention, but ultimately doesn't pass, economist Ray Perryman told the Reporter Telegram by email. Such a bill, if enacted, would have devastating effects on the efforts to provide for global energy needs in the future and would jeopardize the energy leadership the U.S. has established in recent years, in no small measure due to activity in the Permian Basin. If it gets much traction, we will likely assess the economic impact in detail, as it would negatively impact output and jobs in significant ways. For Bruce Bullock, Pat and Jane Bolin Endowed Director, McGuire Energy Institute at Southern Methodist University's Cox School of Business, the proposed legislation is a throwback to the 1980s. The U.S. tried this in 1980, and analyses show that it decreased domestic production, which will increase prices, he told the Reporter Telegram by email. Bullock pointed out that Exxon and Chevron's profits will trail those of Apple, Microsoft, and Google. But we see no effort to tax iPhones or tax advertising on Google. He added, "Corporations don't pay taxes, people do. These taxes are ultimately borne either by consumers who buy gas, shareholders who own stock, many of which are pension funds and people's 401ks, or employees who work for companies. These taxes tend to be very regressive and hurt those who can afford them the least." Bullock further observed that climate provisions in the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act included $260 billion in tax credits to wind and solar power, on top of the $113 billion the energy sources will already get this decade. "That does nothing to lower the price of gas at the pump," he wrote. This article is entitled, "Chevron Helps Launch Permian Proud Digital Initiative," by Mella McEwen. Chevron is putting its resources behind a new digital initiative that highlights the Permian Basin and what makes it an essential and special place to live, work, and play. Permian Proud, which launched Monday, tells the story of the Permian Basin's past, present, and future as an essential provider of oil and gas. But the website goes beyond oil and gas to showcase the achievements and efforts of local residents and organizations. "We want to do our part to highlight this important moment in history and to amplify the many positive developments happening across the Permian Basin," said Ryder Booth, vice president of Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit, in a statement. "Permian Proud will reflect the people, organizations, companies, and industries of the Permian Basin that are uplifting our communities and impacting our nation and the world. Anyone in the region wanting to get the word out to the public on events, fundraisers, initiatives, and more is encouraged to do so through Permian Proud. Chevron has been part of the Permian Basin since 1925 and knows firsthand the unique character and history of the community. As the public will further glean from our stories, it is the efforts of the whole region, each and every contributing member, which makes us Permian proud," the company said in a statement. This article is entitled, "New 924-Home Development Proposed for Northeast Midland," by Mella McEwen. Members of the Planning and Zoning Commission Monday approved a zone change that will lead to a new housing development at North Fairgrounds and East Mockingbird Road. Maverick Engineering requested the zone change from SF3, Single Family Dwelling District in part, TH, Townhouse Dwelling District in part, SF2, Single Family Dwelling District in part, MF16, Multiple Family Dwelling District in part, SF1, Single Family Dwelling District in part, 2F, Two Family Dwelling District in part, and RR, Regional Retail District in part, to PD, Planned District for Housing Development, out of a 317.56-acre tract of land. Representatives of Beaton Bow Homes offered a presentation of what is being called Mockingbird Ridge. They told commissioners it will consist of 924 residential lots, one 6.235-acre retail lot, and approximately 72.91 acres of green space, comprised of parks, walking trails, common areas, and drainage ponds. They said it would be developed in nine phases, and include a new housing prototype called Cottages. The residences will include 687 core SF3 lots, 112 reserve SF3 lots, 26 townhomes, and 99 cottages. Commissioners unanimously approved the zone change. Commissioners also unanimously approved a request by LCA for a zone change from SF1 single-family dwelling district in part and 2F two-family dwelling district in part to PD planned development district for a civic center and community center. The zone change request was made for development of the expansion of the Museum of the Southwest and Haley Memorial Library. The new site plan includes a design of approximately 9,600 square feet for an archives building, which will be used for storage and research workspace. El Capitan Mexican restaurant, Mariscos and Bar, was just opened in the former Tampico location at 2411 West Wall Street, unanimously received approval of its request for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. The restaurant currently has the designation, but made the request in order to extend its hours of business and update the new ownership information. The restaurant is open from 11 a.m. to midnight Monday through Thursday, and from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. the following day on Friday and Saturday, and from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday. The restaurant is proposing alcohol service during those same hours. This article is entitled, Buckner Midland Announces Opening of Its Hope Center, by Ben Schaffer. Buckner Midland, a branch of the nonprofit charitable organization Buckner International, announced the opening of its Family Hope Center at the Buckner Children and Family Services offices on Monday. The Family Preservation Program will be the final installment of the organization's three main services dedicated to caring for vulnerable families, children, and seniors in Midland, Odessa. We have family-based foster care and adoption, as well as the Family Pathways Program, Buckner International President and CEO Dr. Albert Reyes said. There are only three Texas cities that have all three services active, Dallas, Lubbock, and Longview, according to Reyes. In early 2023, Midland will join them. Candace Gray, Senior Director of Buckner Family Hope Centers, said they help local families in need. Typically, the families that Buckner serves through our Family Hope Centers are low-income families that have an income level that is often $50,000 or less, she said. Families struggling with anything, stress, poverty, lack of resources, abuse and neglect, can find assistance by seeking out the Family Hope Center. They come to the Family Hope Center to find hope, support, and empowerment for their families, Gray said. The center will primarily serve families in Midland and Odessa, but is committed to all families in the Permian Basin. Buckner's Family Hope Center will be the first Buckner program in Midland since 2003, according to their press release. Patricia Acosta, Director of Administration and Operations for Buckner West Texas, detailed the recent impact of the organization's service. In 2021, our team was able to facilitate 69 foster care placements, 9 children were able to be in their forever home through adoption, and we were able to secure safe and affordable housing to 19 single mothers who are working toward a college degree. In order to break the generational cycle of poverty through our Family Pathways program, she said. She added that they were able to assist more than 200 adults and children through services like parenting classes, as well as other activities meant to create strong family bonds and end neglect. Acosta made clear the organization's mission through their three E's, engage, equip, and elevate, she said. We will engage the families through assistance and community events. We will equip the families through education, financial empowerment, and child and youth development. And we will elevate the families through family coaching, counseling, and spiritual enrichment. Buckner eventually came across 2412 Loma Drive, the site of the new center, which will be the 9th Buckner Family Hope Center in the state. This article is entitled DPS, Freightliner Crosses I-20 Median, Kills New Mexico Man, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. An 82-year-old man died when a Freightliner truck crossed the center median of Interstate 20 and crashed into another vehicle east of Midland on Friday afternoon, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported Saturday that Granville Lee Oden of Lovington, New Mexico, died at the scene after a Freightliner Columbia collided with Jeep Laredo as Oden was traveling on I-20 east of Midland near South County Road 1150. DPS reported that the Freightliner was traveling east on I-20 when the driver lost control of the vehicle, veered across the center median and into the westbound lanes, striking the Jeep Laredo head-on. A third vehicle avoided the Freightliner but was struck by debris, according to DPS. The driver of the Freightliner, a Laredo man, was treated and released from Midland Memorial Hospital. The accident took place around 3:50 p.m. Friday. This article is entitled DPS, Midlander Dies in Rollover Accident, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 44-year-old Midlander died in a rollover Friday night south of Midland, according to the Department of Public Safety. Charles Edwin Johnson was traveling westbound in a 2019 GMC Sierra on Farm to Market Road 1787 and failed to drive in a single lane, according to DPS. The vehicle then veered off the roadway into the South Barrow Ditch and rolled over. The accident happened 15 miles south of Midland around 11:57 p.m., according to DPS. Johnson was wearing a seatbelt. This article is entitled Lurley Files as Fourth Candidate for Midland ISD District 3 Race. Editor's note, profiles of Tommy Bishop, Carrie McNeil, and Tim Lurley are scheduled for an upcoming edition by Stuart Doreen. A fourth candidate will run for the Midland ISD District 3 seat. Tim Lurley filed Monday, joining Tommy Bishop, Reagan Hinojos, and Tierra Strambler in the November 8th race. District 3 is one of three MISD board races. Districts 5 and 6 are the others. John Trishitti III has filed in District 5 and Carrie McNeil in District 6. Elections on November 8th will include MISD Districts 3, 5, and 6, Midland College Places 1, 2, and 3, and City of Midland Mayor and Districts 3 and 4. The sign-up period to put a name on a local ballot continues through August 22nd. The city secretary's office reported there hasn't been any movement since Amy Stretcher Burks filed for District 4 seat last week. Candidates on the city ballot are Stretcher Burks, Lori Blong for mayor, and Jack Ladd Jr. for District 3. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, August 16th. Charles Miller. Charles Miller, 63, of Lockhart, Texas, passed away on July 28th. Memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, August 18th, at St. Anne's Catholic Church Chapel. Charles was born on June 18, 1959, in Fort Worth, to Carol and Thomas Miller. Charles was preceded in death by his parents, Carol and Thomas Miller. He is survived by his brothers and sisters, Thomas Miller, spouse Ray Irvine of Charlottesville, Virginia, Brian Miller of San Antonio, Aileen Miller of Midland, Ann Hedstrom, spouse Kelly of Midland, and Tony Miller, spouse Andrea of Castle Rock, Colorado, as well as many nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to a favorite animal rescue shelter or other organization that cares for the needs of animals. Murray Franklin Potts, Jr. Murray Franklin Potts, Jr. passed away on August 10th in Midland. He was born on September 8, 1952, to Murray Franklin Potts Sr. and Viola Triggs Potts. He is survived by his daughter, Kayla Potts Taylor, and husband, Ross, son, Cody Potts, as well as several grandchildren, and his sister, Valerie Steele, and husband, Donnie. He was preceded in death by his parents, Murray and Viola Potts. Services for Murray start with a visitation on Monday, August 15th, at Hurley Funeral Home in Pleasanton from 3 to 8 p.m., with a graveside service on Tuesday, August 16th, at San Miguel Cemetery in Cross. Retha Kettner Peterson. Retha Kettner Peterson of Midland passed away August 14th. She was born July 15th, 1950, in Oklahoma. She was adopted and spent most of her life in Midland. She was predeceased by her parents and sister. She is survived by her children, Robin Berkla and husband Stanley of Midland, and Ryan Peterson and wife Jennifer of Granbury, as well as several grandchildren. Ruth Worthington. Funeral service for Ruth Ann Bingham Worthington of Cleburne will be conducted at 1 p.m. Friday, August 19th at North Cleburne Baptist Church, with burial following at Rio Vista Cemetery. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, August 18th at Rosser Funeral Home. Ruth Ann Bingham Worthington was born on January 16, 1951 in DeLeon, Texas, and was called home on August 10th at the age of 71. Survivors include her husband, Tony Worthington, two sons, Samuel Bryan and Brian Worthington, and wife Pam, daughter Jamie Luna and husband Jose, as well as eight grandchildren and four great-grandchildren, a sister Annette Bingham, brother Galen Kimball, and many other family and friends. Death Notices. Juan de Dios Ramos Ramos. Juan de Dios Ramos Ramos, 75 of Midland, passed away August 13th. Viewing will be Thursday, August 18th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. A funeral mass is set for Friday, August 19th at 10 a.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.heavenlygatefh.com. Kenneth Ray Childs. Kenneth Ray Childs of Midland died August 10th. No service is scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Raymond Howard Randall. Raymond Howard Randall of Midland died August 8th. There are no services scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Romana Trevino. Romana Trevino, 72, of Midland, passed away August 11th. Viewing will be Tuesday, August 16th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. that evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral is set for Wednesday, August 17th at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, August 16th. City Session to Focus on Game Rooms and Budget by Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council will discuss game rooms, next year's budget, and a fire department study Tuesday during its regularly scheduled work session. Last week, the council asked the city's legal staff to create an ordinance that will eventually lead to the elimination of all game rooms within the city limits. The ordinance will stop the issuance of new business permits for game rooms and prohibit existing game rooms from renewing their licenses once they expire. Council members have indicated they are receiving a lot of complaints from constituents who believe the game rooms are unsightly and attract criminals. In addition, undercover Odessa Police Department operations have resulted in numerous arrests for illegal gambling. Also on Tuesday, the council will hold its first open public hearing on the proposed FY22-23 city budget. Included in the proposed budget is a 6% increase in water sewer rates, a 3.5% increase in solid waste rates, and a possible 2-cent property tax rate increase for every $100 of assessed valuation. City staff has recommended the council adopt a $109 million general fund budget compared to $101 million last year, with the additional funding in large part going toward park improvements, fire rescue radios, IT switch upgrades, repairs and improvements to several city buildings. The general fund budget also includes a 4% pay hike approved by the council in May. Included in the proposed budget are two neighborhood parks on the east side and $10 million in street projects, with part of the funding coming from leftover FY21-22 funds. The council is scheduled to vote on the final budget September 13th. The city council will also discuss the possibility of hiring AP Triton Consulting Tuesday. Odessa Fire Rescue Chief John Alvarez would like the city to spend just under $67,000 on a comprehensive study that will help the department improve its overall strategy in the upcoming years. According to documents provided to the city, Triton will interview command staff, city officials, union representatives, firefighters, paramedics, and dispatchers as part of the process. In addition, the company will study such things as the community's population, age, and density, and the department's response times, budget, and facilities, and come up with a strategic plan. The study will take 120 to 150 days to complete, and it will take an extra 30 to 45 days for the strategic plan to be written. ECISD nets a B in state ratings by Ruth Campbell. After years of subpar results, Ector County ISD announced a B rating as a district under Texas Education Agency accountability ratings. It's a new day in ECISD. It's a new day, Superintendent Scott Murray told board members, principals, and central office staff gathered in the boardroom for the event. The ratings measure growth, proficiency measures, gap closure, and a variety of other measures, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Previously, the district was a C. Schools that earned an A, B, or C grade will be recorded and published, but Murray said those that did not will be considered unrated. The overall score is an 82 and the growth measure is an 85. He said some principal adjustments have been made in the last couple of years for schools that were unrated. We know the right things are happening, and we know that those schools are all headed in the right direction, so we're not concerned about those, Murray said. Murray said the ratings show ECISD has grown to a new level of performance. We are now focused on the next step, our journey to excellence, Murray said. This continuous improvement journey requires us to be bigger, bolder, and better than we have ever been before. Our students deserve our excellence. The number of schools earning an A rose from 3 to 7. The number of B-rated schools doubled from 6 to 12. In 2019, 20 schools were rated either D or F. Today, a news release said 19 schools are either an A or a B. 5 schools grew from an F to a B, the release said. Board President Steve Brown extended his congratulations to the entire team of 4,200. We want to recognize the work that our bus drivers, cafeteria workers, custodial and maintenance staff, along with our paraprofessionals that provide so much support on a daily basis. Most importantly are the teachers and campus leaders who work tirelessly to deliver quality instruction to our students each day, Brown said. Referring to the principals, Brown said, that's you. That's the personnel on your campus, and we're truly appreciative, and it doesn't go unrecognized. The dedicated focus of our teachers is clearly evident in the results we see here today. Career and technical education, fine arts, and athletics also contribute, Brown said. The improvement seen over the past 3 years is not by accident. Dr. Murray and his team embarked on a mission of improving our processes, and a deliberate and unwavering expectation of quality instruction for all students. He's talking about being bold, being courageous, and going where we've not been before, or at least not in a long time, Brown added. The accountability system was different back in the early 2000s, but the last time Brown remembered ECISD being highly rated was 2002 or 2003, when they came within a hair of being a recognized district. He added that there is a satisfaction that what Murray and his team have put in place is working. Brown said the thing he most respects is that they are staying with the process that's in place and not going with the latest and greatest initiatives or items. The challenges have been great over the last 3 years, and the opportunities greater, as all of you know. Our country, our state, our school community face the challenge of an unprecedented pandemic and the challenge of providing the best instruction for all students in a remote environment. The Ector County Independent School District rose to that challenge. This is clearly exemplified in the results seen here today. And while there is marked improvement, and we will all celebrate, there is still work to be done. Our district is in good hands with Dr. Murray and this team of dedicated employees. Most of all, we want to thank our students for their hard work and accomplishments and hope that each one of you convey that to the students in your building as well as parents, Brown added. Murray noted the changes in ECISD since he started. We've changed the foundation. The floor on which we work is different now. We now provide rigorous curricular resources to students and teachers. The tools that our teachers have to work with today are at a much higher level of rigor, Murray said. We powerfully incorporate the tools of technology, unlike we've ever been able to do before. We do that today in ECISD. We provide equity-based funding. We drive the dollars and the cents to the kids that need them the most because we know that it costs more money to educate kids of poverty and our fragile children, he added. ECISD has invested in the district's 4,200 employees, providing them with training and compensation incentives. Murray said they put some of their most effective principals in some of the most challenged schools. For students, ECISD has incorporated blended learning. When you marry virtual learning with the most effective teachers to provide a new and different learning opportunity. The district has expanded pre-kindergarten. They have expanded summer school, increasing instructional days from 169 to 180, and adding another 30 days in the summer for elementary students through the additional day school year program. We've changed the way we do business in ECISD, and trustees, we have transformed ourselves. We do not look like the district that we looked like 3 years ago, and because of that, we have made history, Murray said. Star and end-of-course exam performance increased at every level. We've seen a point increase in our college, career, and military readiness indicator in just the last 3 years. Our graduation rate right now at 85.5% is the highest graduation rate we've had in over 20 years in ECISD, Murray said. San Jacinto Principal Fallon McLean said her campus was a B in 2018-19, so they have been keeping high expectations ever since. She noted that she is building on the success of her predecessor, Aaron Bueno, who is now an executive director of leadership for ECISD. The school has 400 students in grades kindergarten through 5, and a high percentage are economically disadvantaged. It is now an A school. These are students who traditionally and historically have not had the most stable, and school is their stability. San Jacinto, for many of them, is their home, So it is very, very important to us that we block out all of those things that are detrimental factors, and that we are the ones that want to cultivate this love for learning, McLean said. ECSO starts fund for a family who lost their loved one in Saturday fatal fire, by Kim Smith. The Ector County Sheriff's Office has established checking and savings accounts for the family who lost an 11-year-old loved one in Saturday morning's fatal fire in West Odessa. A fire broke out in Misty Perkins Williams' mobile home on North Bridal Path and 16th Street shortly after 3 a.m. Saturday. Williams and another child were able to escape, but efforts to rescue Williams' 11-year-old daughter, Azaria, were unsuccessful due to heavy smoke and flames, authorities said. Ector County ISD Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said Azaria was an Ector College Prep middle school student. He added that counselors were on site Monday and that it is standard practice at any ECISD campus to bring them in. He said counselors will evaluate the situation and see if there's a need for them to be there longer. Sheriff Mike Griffiths said Williams' sister is a lieutenant with the department, and Azaria's grandfather retired from the ECSO after more than 40 years of service. We've known these people for 30 to 40 years, so when this went down, we thought we needed to do something. We've done fundraisers for other causes, Griffiths said. They've lost everything. The house was lost along with a loved one, and there's going to be expenses moving forward for those folks. The department is also considering setting up a nonprofit organization, so it'll be easier to help the victims of tragedies in the future, the sheriff said. In a situation like this, it's tough on the family, and sometimes you don't know what to do, but by golly, money will certainly help, he said. The cause of the fire remains undetermined, but investigators believe it started in the northeast bedroom of the older model mobile home. The accounts have been established in Williams' name at Southwest Heritage Credit Union. The savings account number is 1513-6907, and the checking account number is 1017-8523. A monetary donation box has also been placed in the Ector County Sheriff's Office main lobby. Chevron boosts basin with webpage. PermianProud.com highlights area's good news, by Bob Campbell. In an era heavily weighted by dead serious news, these lyrics from the Carter family's big hit record of 1928, The Sunny Side of Life, characterize the Chevron Corps' approach to the area news webpage it put online Monday. At PermianProud.com, Chevron's Mid-Continent business unit in Midland is publicizing good news and inviting citizens to take part with reports on their public events, fundraisers, and other such initiatives. A company spokeswoman said Monday that the website will highlight the region's unique past, present, and future as a vital supplier of the oil and gas that enable human progress. The online publication will showcase and uplift the achievements and efforts of local residents and organizations, she said. MCBU Vice President Ryder Booth said the webpage will emphasize the Permian Basin's many attributes. We want to do our part to highlight this important moment in history and amplify the many positive developments happening across the basin, Booth said. Permian Proud will reflect the people, organizations, companies, and industries of the Permian Basin that are uplifting our communities and impacting our nation and world. Noting that her company drilled its first oil well in the basin in 1925 in Eddy County, New Mexico, Chevron spokeswoman Katie Matthews said Permian Proud has been in the development stage since last year. We are by no means a news organization, she said. Along with stories from the Odessa American, Midland Reporter-Telegram, and other area newspapers and television and radio stations, she said, the webpage will depend on area citizens and groups to send material to news-tips@permianproud.com. Among the Monday reports were a tribute to the Tall City Brewing Company in Midland, an item on the retirement of University of Texas Permian Basin soccer coach Dennis Peterson after 22 seasons, and a report on the new solar energy field in Eddy County that Chevron is installing in partnership with Algonquin Power and Utilities. It will all be positive coverage, just community stuff, Matthews said. The basin has a unique character, and it is a special place to live, work, and play. She said other company news like Chevron's partnership with the environmentally oriented Project Canary is also being reported. The world is facing increased energy demand, and this methane monitoring technology helps with an issue that is a top priority to us as a company, Matthews said. She said Booth reported at the Midland Chamber of Commerce's January 26th State of Oil and Gas Luncheon that the basin is one of the lowest carbon onshore basins in the world. Matthews said the Chevron North America Mid-Continent Business Unit has 800 employees at its Midland headquarters and another 1,200 in the region. She said the corporation will sponsor the commemorative Air Force's annual High Sky Wing Air Show September 9th through the 10th. Quick Hits, annual pause event. The Produced Water Society's 6th annual Permian event will take place starting at 7 a.m. today and Wednesday at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Day of Giving. Texas Tech University will host its inaugural Day of Giving today and Wednesday. This online social media-driven philanthropic event is an opportunity for Red Raiders, fans, and friends to fund featured projects across the university. The event, themed Rally Together, launches at 8 a.m. today and concludes at 4:03 p.m. Wednesday. It is 32 hours and 3 minutes, or 1,923 minutes, signifying the year of Texas Tech's founding. The Day of Giving features 19 projects that will support students, scholarships, and other initiatives in the 2022-23 academic year. Back to School Expo and First Responders Celebration. Odessa College and City of Odessa has scheduled Back to School Expo and a First Responders and Public Servants Celebration from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at Woodson Park, 1120 East Murphy Street. There will be demonstrations, food, and more. Support students through the OC Food Pantry. If able to bring an item, canned beans, canned meats, cereal, or hygiene products. Free back-to-school haircuts. Amenti Beauty Academy, 3119 East University Boulevard, Suite A, is offering free haircuts for students ages 5 through 12 through August 31st. Call 432-272-4444. Free STI testing and treatment. Texas Tech Physicians Family Medicine Clinic, 702 West 5th Street, is offering free STI testing and treatment from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesdays. Appointments are not required. Call 432-703-5066. Accountability presentation on ECISD agenda. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will hear an accountability ratings summary at their 6 p.m. meeting today, Tuesday, on the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Accountability ratings were made public by the Texas Education Agency Monday. Some campuses and districts statewide have already made their ratings known. In a news conference Monday, Superintendent Scott Murray announced that the district earned a B in the ratings. In 2021-22, state accountability was modified. So there will not be any D or F schools in the state of Texas because the only schools that are being rated are schools that received an A, B, or C. Once again, the commissioner made some adjustments with the accountability system because of the pandemic, Murray said on August 4th. A public hearing on ECISD's intention to consider designating the Quail Run Carbon Reinvestment Zone is also on the agenda Tuesday. Trustees will consider approving a memorandum of understanding between ECISD and University of Texas Permian Basin regarding a diagnostician pipeline designed to support selected ECISD seeking their master's degree in special education and certification as a diagnostician. Ector County ISD Special Services Department will partner with UTPB College of Education to provide selected candidates an online option to obtain Texas certification licensure for a diagnostician within a 24-month time frame, supplemental agenda material said. Trustees also will consider appointing and/or hiring principals for Buse and Travis Elementary Schools, the principal at Bowie Middle School, and a new executive director of career and technical education. Also on the agenda are the presentation of Extra Mile Award to Lorraine Perriman, Lisa Wyman, and Chris Cole, presentation of Split Gavel Award to Tammy Hawkins, the announcement of NAM Foundation Best Communities for Music Education Award, and introduction of UIL Outstanding Soloists. Under donations of more than $10,000, Sparklight gave $11,000 for Chromebooks to benefit the Teen Parent Related Services and Transition Learning Center. Also, $35,000 from the Education Foundation for Fifth Grade Fine Arts String Program Instruments. Landgraf calls for EPA to be reined in. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, submitted a letter to President Joe Biden regarding the potential non-attainment designation of portions of the Texas Permian Basin by the Environmental Protection Agency. The letter was also signed by seven other members of the Texas House who represent portions of the Permian Basin. "We implore you to take necessary action as our nation's chief executive to rein in the EPA and prevent this discretionary action from taking place," the letter reads. "A non-attainment designation of the Permian Basin is at odds with U.S. economic and national security interests and, ironically, environmental interests as well." In June, citing data obtained from air quality monitors in New Mexico, the EPA announced its intention to consider redesignating the Texas portion of the Permian Basin a non-attainment area, an area that does not meet the standards of the 2015 Ozone National Ambient Air Quality Standards. If finalized, this proposal would require the state implement a plan to bring the area into attainment with the NAAQS, ultimately resulting in further regulatory burdens on the oil and gas industry in the Permian Basin that could slow production and reduce supply. The announced action is discretionary, giving the president the opportunity to prevent it from ultimately going into effect. As chairman of the Texas House Environmental Regulation Committee and a proud lifelong West Texan, I will continue to do everything in my power to protect the people who live and work in the Permian Basin, Landgraf said. "Here in West Texas, we want to breathe fresh air just as much as anyone on the West Coast, and our great state has a long history of producing energy cleaner and more efficiently than any other region on Earth. The EPA is ignoring this fact in favor of a Green New Deal-inspired fantasy that will ultimately cause the downfall of our nation if common sense and reason do not prevail. I'm thankful we're not alone in this fight for Texas energy and American freedom, as we have support from numerous members of the Texas legislature, as well as Governor Abbott and Congressman Pflugert. We'll keep fighting for what's best for Texas, what's best for the USA." The news release says if President Biden does not direct the EPA to stand down, the next step of the redesignation process, according to the Clean Air Act, is a notification letter sent to the governors of Texas and New Mexico, creating the opportunity for affected states to provide feedback. The EPA then has to wait at least 240 days before a final redesignation decision can be made. Man arrested after ramming car with his kids inside. An Odessa man was arrested on Saturday after his wife told police he repeatedly rammed her car while she, her children, and a friend were traveling in it. According to Odessa Police Department report, officers received a 911 call around 2 p.m. about a rolling disturbance. The caller said Victor Martinez, 35, was trying to kill them and take the two children in the car. Prior to their arrival, officers were told one of the cars had hit a fire hydrant and stop sign at San Jacinto Street and Texas Avenue. When officers arrived, they found a Nissan Rogue with extensive damage on both sides of the car and a woman who said she had been a passenger in the car. She told them Martinez had crashed into them multiple times while driving a Dodge Charger and was now at his mother's house on North Texas Avenue. Officers found the Charger with extensive front end damage. According to the report, when they spoke with Martinez's wife, she told them Martinez rammed her car twice at Jackson Avenue and 48th Street and a third time at Texas Avenue and San Jacinto Street. She said the third hit caused her vehicle to spin out and hit the fire hydrant and stop sign. One of the children in the car complained of arm pain, and the woman passenger's stomach and shin were scraped up. Her right shoulder and forearm were also reddened. Martinez's wife said he was upset about something she had said the night before, and he had broken up with her. Martinez was arrested on suspicion of 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, and 1 count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, both Class II felonies, punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on surety bonds totaling $200,000.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.